Well, welcome. Hello. This is the practice night, and because of the topic, it's not going to be this full. Usually our practice nights go to like 9:30, or we have a day. We have a Saturday where we come and do certain meditations. But, you know, in talking with Geshe-la and others, because of the topic, it's not quite like that. Now, typically what I do on a practice day, too, is there's a test. And I think I told you all last week it's not really a test this time. So, you know, I've kind of modified everything. I don't think I have this on right, but obviously you can hear me. Like this, Brian? Okay. All right. All right, so we just finished this memorial, so I'm trying to switch gears here, so excuse me if it's clunky. It just feels very strange to go from memorial to this in 2 seconds flat. So let's just meditate. Let's switch gears and meditate. So get in a comfortable posture. Get in your meditative posture, not a comfortable posture. A comfortable meditative posture. If you're sitting in a chair, just make sure your feet are flat on the floor. And check your spine. Check all the points of meditation that you know so well now. And have your eyes just gently closed so a little light comes in and keeps you alert. And just feel your muscles relaxing, but still your support, your skeleton, your frame, balanced and solid. And as we go through our inhalation, exhalation count, especially the first round, just feel as you're exhaling that all of your thoughts, concerns, any discomfort you might be having, anything left over from today is just being exhaled out way beyond. And so begin your count on one, and one inhalation, exhalation is one count. And then the second one is two, and you go all the way up to 10, or if you prefer, to 5. And again, conjoining that with the visualization of having, of exhaling out all of the worries of the day. Imagine that's exhaling out as thick black smoke and inhaling in clean, crystal, white light. We'll just do that for the next 5 to 10 minutes, and I'll ring the bell when we're done with that one. now place all of your attention on someone who has been a teacher for you in your life. It could be a traditional teacher or just somebody who's taught you something that has made it an impact, an impression on you. And just review the experience and the benefits and the effect this has had on you in your life. Okay, so last time we went around and introduced ourselves and said how we had connected with the center. This time, I think we can do this. Let's go around and say your name again. And we have a new person here today. So we'll just say your name and mention one teacher who you've known, who's impacted your life. You don't have to say a whole lot about them. But I'll give you an example. You've already heard mine, but my name is Steep, or Stephanie, and my teacher was in my civics teacher, the person who I'm talking about, who I don't really remember that much of the civics that I learned, but he got me from being such a disruption and such a pain in the butt and got me to start writing poetry. So he told me this is what helped him when he was going through difficulties, and he suggested I start writing some poetry. So he showed me some of his, and it was just that he went above and beyond what all the other teachers in my high school were doing that made such a profound impact on me, that somebody was noticing and caring, and I'm still writing poetry. In fact, I won a competition a year and a half ago, so it changed my life in many ways. Poetry is the smallest, but it changed my life in many ways. So I can also, when I meditate on that, see all the ripple effects of that connection. Yeah, okay, so why don't we start there and just go around. What? Yeah. Oh. That's a good thing.
I'm Joe. When I started, when I got out of college and started to work, there was a supervisor that was technically brilliant, recognized as a world expert in his field, and I was lucky enough to get to work with him. And I found right off the bat that not only was he technically competent, but he was also very practical, very down to earth, very personable, and people just wanted to be around him, mainly because of his personality. Mm-hmm. But if you were around him for his personality, you also picked up all of his expertise, and it was a remarkable experience for me.
That's an interesting point to come back to later about that connection of the personality and the... We'll talk about that with the four alliances again, but yeah, thank you.
Hi, my name's Mary, and I guess probably the most profound teacher I've had was an Indian saint, Amaji, and I met her, had kind of multiple incarnations in this life, and I had sort of a young adult life. Oil wells and Lear jets and, I mean, crazy stuff.
Wow.
And then around 33, I began to, is this all there is? You know, this is what, I begin the awakening and studying. And I remember when I met her, after I met her, it was really a deep, I mean, there were like 200 people there. Now there's thousands of people that come to her, and she's so huge. But It was really amazing things would happen, mm-hmm. you know, these things that they can do to really get your attention.
Mm-hmm.
Things happen. And then just deepening my spiritual, and it totally changed my life. I mean,
okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm Joan, and I would have to say that I've had a combination of teachers, I think, because I've had teachers that obviously they didn't know they were teachers, and they taught me from a negative side, like mm-hmm. lessons learned, life lessons learned, and they were serious, hardcore lessons, and they were teachers. But as far as a positive teacher, I'd have to say it was my grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
And just who she was, just mm-hmm. this teeny little peanut, but no one could push her around, you know, and she just was this powerhouse, and everyone wanted to be around her, and mm-hmm. she just had this electricity, and it was great stuff.
Thank you. And we've been talking in this group about the role of the spiritual teacher, so that's why I'm asking people just to mention somebody, a person who's taught you something and their impact. Okay.
I think my great aunt, she actually didn't pass away until she was 102, which I think was probably, her personality was probably why.
Mm-hmm.
Her son died in his early 20s, mm-hmm. and he had Tay-Sachs disease, and then mm-hmm. her husband ended up committing suicide, mm-hmm. but she was the most cheerful person mm-hmm. I've ever met.
Mm-hmm.
It's still like that, and she passed away a few years ago, but I don't know, it's just amazing to me that she went through all that suffering, but she was still such an amazing, mm-hmm. kind person.
Right.
And I couldn't picture her any other way, so.
Her life was her teaching.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. By example. Wonderful. Thank you. Oh, and tell us your name.
Oh, my name's Chris.
Chris, okay, thanks.
Hi, I'm Tony. One significant person that stands out for me is my former supervisor, who I suppose I met in the mid-90s. And before she was my supervisor, we worked on the same unit together. So I got to see her every day in morning meetings
mm-hmm.
and in treatment planning conferences. And she would sit in groups, and then she formally became my teacher, so it was more of a kind of structured, contractual relationship as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really excited.
Mm-hmm.
And she just epitomized what the work that we were doing together, both in skills, in technical skills,
mm-hmm.
and her own understanding, and being able to model that on a regular basis, consistently.
Right.
And not only that, but, you know, when we would sit down and actually talk about a particular event, she'd be able to articulate it and add different nuances to it that even in my observations, I didn't pick up.
Mm-hmm.
And when she explained it, I just grew more.
Mm-hmm.
And, God, I guess that was about 15, 17 years ago. And I love to receive emails from her today. I get real excited. I say, "Oh, it's me," and, you know. And she says, "You know, it's about time we get together for lunch." And I'm excited all the, you know, until I see her.
Yeah.
And it's always very warm.
Mm.
And when I think of, you know, both the wisdom wing of a Buddha and the compassionate wing, you know, there are certain people that kind of exhibit that right off, and you could kind of sense it.
Mm-hmm.
And she's certainly one of those for me.
Mm-hmm.
And
nice.
She's an endearing character for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm Steve. I don't know about spiritual teachers. I've had a person really impact my life. Brian Collins. I'm a retired homicide investigator, and Brian's a criminal defense lawyer. When I retired, I was not really lost, but, you know, I had a lot of time on my hands. But anyway, so Brian called me, and he heard that I was getting my private investigator's license and asked me to investigate a case for him. And I've, you know, been a very conservative in law enforcement, and so you form this opinion about the criminal defense bar that's maybe not exactly accurate. Well, clearly was accurate, but anyway. So Brian took me under his wing, taught me criminal defense. His ethics and his desire to know the truth of a matter stunned me. And he took me under his wing, introduced my work to other lawyers, and that blossomed into work all over the southeastern part of the United States. He's still a mentor. Now he's a Superior Court judge. So it's amazing how just that interaction with one individual can change, you know, a path like that.
Exactly. Interesting. Thank you.
I'm Marion, and I thought of one of the first real early impacts on me was, I guess the first person I remember outside family was a kindergarten teacher. And I remember being very distressed because we were doing painting of some kind, and I was doing a squirrel, and this, I didn't have room in my piece of paper for the rest of the squirrel, and so I went to her very distressed, and so she just calmly said, "Oh, well, you can just paint outside your little piece of paper." And so I took the whole table. But it was just really the way she came across impacted me at that time. Of course, you know, who knows how the brains work when we're like that age. But I just remembered how she was so calm, and it opened it expanded my view a lot, that I don't have to stick into this very narrow place.
Right.
And she would also let me get away with, I didn't like to take naps, so there were little holes in the cots where the legs come together, so I'd get my crayon and sneak it in and write on the floor. And so she was very encouraging. So
she was an artist at heart. She appreciated
it. Hi, I'm Courtney. I thought of a couple of people when you first mentioned this, and so one of them I've been kind of focusing on, I guess, is a good friend of mine that I met in high school, and just kind of how our relationship grew as friendship, or as adults through friendship. She's become kind of a teacher for me, and I really love and respect that about her. So my friend Stephanie is her name, and as we became friends in high school, we kind of drifted apart, and as we came back together as adults, she kind of feeds this energy of this love for life, and, you know, I kind of admire that about her, and, you know, so every time we get together, we kind of have these, like, passionate, great discussions, and, you know, she's always kind of off investigating some spirituality here, and I'm kind of off investigating here, and we kind of come together, and, learn a lot from each other through our own experiences. So it's kind of cool to have a friend and a teacher in that way, I guess. So,
yeah. Thank you.
I'm Brian. I've thought of two teachers I had in high school. They were both English teachers and writing teachers, and they were both kind of hard on me. But they were always very encouraging too, and really firm. If they didn't like a particular sentence, they'd hand the paper back and go back and write it all again. But it helped. So, and they were always encouraging that way too.
I'm Diane, and to pick one teacher. Really, really difficult for me because I was kind of like a sponge anyway. In my home situation, I got a lot of negative messages, and I refused to believe them in a way, and so kind of gravitated to people who were more supportive of me. And one particular teacher came to mind, my sixth grade teacher, Mattie Lou Gassett, from someplace in Mississippi. And somehow she got herself from Mississippi to Washington, D.C., and would transport from downtown DuPont Circle to the suburbs of Washington, D.C. by bus. because she didn't own a car.
Wow.
She was single, and she had a limp, and we never could figure out why she had a limp. And she was probably in her 40s, and she had a way of commanding a classroom of really rascally, unruly, lower middle class kids who didn't have the economic and educational support that a lot of kids had. And what she did with me was put me in the cloakroom.
Oh.
Because I get my work done before everybody else, and then I turn around and talk to them or, you know, draw pictures all over the place like Marion, and probably was quite disruptive. And I get my long division done, and they were hanging out there for half an hour working a problem. She put me in the cloakroom and said, we need to have a bulletin board. Can you research this? I had no idea what she was real. She was doing differentiated education. And I sat back there in that cloakroom sometimes 2 and 3 hours a day reading the encyclopedia. And I was the happiest kid you can imagine. And I admired her because she was independent. She was single. She was supporting herself. She got herself where she wanted to go. And I decided to be a teacher because I wanted that kind of independence for myself. And she gave me that. And she gave me the permission to go find things out. And when the bulletin board got done or the diorama was done, she always included it in the curriculum discussion. Oh, look over here. So I wasn't isolated. She was skillful enough to make me a part of the whole process. But as you can tell, she was a very, very powerful woman in my life.
Thank you.
I'm Jeff. It's easy for me. I got clean 12 years ago. I've shared that before. I'd be dead. My first sponsor was a big Dominican guy named Fernando Mayon, and we still talk to this day. And he just, you know, when you come off, I was a coke and a crack addict, and when you come off that stuff, you're nuts because you just don't know how to live, and everything pisses you off. And so he showed me a lot of love and care until I finally got the wiring somehow got a little right, and pretty much saved my life, because I would, you know, you keep doing that kind of lifestyle, you're going to die, go somewhere. Now I know where, but so yeah, and I went through a difficult time a few months ago. We hadn't spoken in a while, but we picked it right back up, because in the 12-step program, once you get that bond with somebody, it never goes away. And that's kind of what I'm getting out of some of this, what you've been saying about the teacher here. You don't have to talk to him all the time, but that bond, it never goes away. And that's what I have with this guy.
Right.
And, yeah, I'm grateful for that. And, cause I read all this dependent origination stuff. If it wasn't for him, I wouldn't be here.
Absolutely.
And that's how I look at him. It's like a savior for me in my life, more, and a teacher. Because, like I said, that's just a nasty lifestyle. And I'm lucky I'm here. Thank you.
Thanks. I'm taking notes because there's some common themes with these very different kinds of teachers that everybody's describing, but some very interesting common themes.
Hi, I'm Jack, and my teacher is my son. In 1991, Michael died. And from his death, I grew. I fought to make sure that his life was not in vain. And I switched careers. Two things I said I'd never do. I went back to school and I taught. I taught elementary education. I, had it not been for Michael's death and guidance, I would have never been there. You know, the kids and I related really well. I had two rules. You have to take risks, because if you don't fail and fall on your face, you're not going to learn anything. So that environment had to be like that.
Right.
And to tell the truth, because you could drive a truck through it, you know. So it was pretty easy just to...
Right.
And the love I've gotten from the kids is better than, you know, anything I gave to them.
Right. Well, you became a teacher.
Yeah.
Very, very interesting.
I guess.
I'm done, and I'd say probably my teacher, or at least when I was focusing on there, was my older brother. Because in my family situation, like my parents didn't really, I mean, like they cared and they did stuff, but I don't think they really were concerned about my education as much as he was. Mm-hmm. And he really came in and like drilled me in a lot of ways that I probably wouldn't have otherwise gotten, even to the point where I was kind of annoyed by him.
Mm-hmm.
But he really taught me in the later years about self-discipline in a way that I didn't really get anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And self-discipline has really helped me in whatever I want to pursue.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really helped me out in my life.
I'm Katie. I guess one of the teachers that inspired me most was my middle school art teacher, because she like really made art something fun for me and like helped me have like confidence to put my own personality and like style into it. And now like I'm going into art partly because of her and like where she like got me with like what I was drawing and everything.
Wow. Does she know? Yeah, that's great.
My name's Louise, and I think my teacher is my mom. She had a really rough marriage and raised four kids. I don't know how she did it, but she always taught all of us that no matter what, that you should have compassion for everyone. You can always give something, even if you only have a dollar. You can give back and give to people, and that has stuck with me for my life.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and that is, and because of her, I'm the person that I am today.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Carol, and this is really hard to pick just one because so many people have had so much influence on me, but I decided that when I had a 2.5-year-old had just had a brand new baby and was going through a divorce, that I would go back to school, to nursing school.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was taking the early nursing classes, and I had to fit a microbiology class in there too. And I was just really overwhelmed with everything. So I failed my microbiology, my very first test, just horribly. And I was mortified and embarrassed, and I wrote on the back of the exam to this teacher, Mr. Lawson was his name, that he did not deserve to have a student like me in this class, that he deserved far better than that because he was a very good teacher. And so he read it and he said, meet me after class. So we talked, and he wanted to know what was happening in my life, and I told him. And he didn't say a whole lot about it, but he was very understanding, and he gave me the courage to believe that I could do this, and that I was smart, and I was intelligent, and that I could handle this, and that I could ask him for anything.
Yeah.
Well, my kids got real sick during one point in time, and I had to miss a whole week of labs in the lab. And so the way that he talked to me about that was that I could make that them up. I didn't have a babysitter, and he said it didn't matter. He said, bring the kids with you. So here I had a 2.5-year-old and just a few month old baby. And I got busy in the lab, and he took care of my kids that week.
Wow.
And he put them in a stroller, and he walked them all around the campus during the springtime and let me get my lab work done. And I ended up passing that class with an A. And I will never forget him, because he taught me that you just really need to reach out to people. You don't know what's going on, and you just don't know what's going on in people's lives and how maybe that you can help them in some very simple way, you know. And he actually really enjoyed all of this too. So Mr. Lawson, I love him.
Thank you.
You're here, you're official.
Do you have a teacher? You can tell us, because okay, you can always pass. You can always pass, but Chris just came here today. So feel free.
Well, I'm Bob, and mine is more of a professional one as well. I did really well academically in high school because I had really good teachers and I was constantly under my mother's thumb. But when I went to college,
the thumb came
much
off.
Better time. I was at UC at Davis and hanging in there but not doing very well, so I transferred to Colorado State, which had the degree I wanted in animal nutrition, of all things. Didn't do very well there either the first year, but the second year I changed advisors, and a fellow named Kirvin Knox, who was probably an assistant professor at the time, but really good teacher, really good researcher. And we hit it off right away because his PhD was from UC at Davis, and he was born and raised about 30 miles from where I was, born and raised in California. So we hit it off, and I thought, at that time, I think I can do this, and I want his job, or I want a job like his. And somehow, I took several of his courses. I got a job working in his lab. I did an internship with him. And he just served as a role model for me. And I thought, if I want a job like his, then I need to know everything he knows, at least as well as he does, if not better. So the last 2 years of college, I had straight A's. When I went to grad, well, I went in the Marines for 3 years, but then after that, went to graduate school and had straight A's. And he even helped me. I had a bunch of graduate school offers, and he helped me select which one was the best. And even after I went into a very narrow field of wildlife nutrition, but anyway, even after I got my first job at a tiny little school no one had heard of in South Texas, and after a couple of years, I was offered a job at UC Berkeley, which is, in our field, as good as it gets. And I looked it over very carefully and turned it down. And I was really unsure of myself, and I called him, and we had a good talk, and he confirmed that I'd made the right decision, and I continued following him. He became a department head. I became a department head. He became a dean. I became a dean. And anyway, it was just and we still stay in touch. Christmas cards and visiting once in a while over the years. So it wasn't an overt mentoring, but he really was a mentor. Mm-hmm. I stayed in touch with him a lot, and he was a very man of great character, too.
Mm. Yeah. Thank you.
Not least, right?
Not least.
Ashley and... Wow, teachers. trying to pick one, very difficult. But one that kind of stands out for me is my dad.
Mm-hmm.
I'm such a daddy's girl, but I mean, like, I like listening to everyone talk. I go, everything that's happened in my life from, being a kid all the way until now, like, he's always been, like, the same and always offered me the same guidance no matter what I was going through, which is kind of profound for me just because, you know, I mean, you go through lots of stages in your life. I mean, even from going through high school and trying to figure out, like, who you are and what you want to be. And, you know, no matter what troubles I've had in my life, he's always been able to kind of get my head kind of right about whatever I was going through. But then as far as spiritual teachers go... lots of things got me here, but I just never forget my first teaching with Geshe-la.
Mm-hmm.
That, like, was the beginning, and I don't know. I could never imagine after, like hearing him teach the first time, like, not coming back for more teaching.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just every week I look forward to coming on Sundays and learning more about Buddhism. So.
Great. Well, you know, that I loved hearing all these. So, did I miss anybody? Anyway. She's in and out. What wonderful stories. I mean, it's such a wide range from children to a woman who's 102, family, professional. The common thing that I just kept noticing was the way that these people modeled something for us that we could then follow, and their consistency. You know, that part of what they were modeling for us was their consistency that we were so impressed by, you know, that wasn't just a one-time thing, or you wouldn't really not have followed them. It would have been just a fluke. Also, I like this thing, I think Brian was saying, like, you know, they're kind of hard on him, that they can be Because since they're one of the things they're teaching is self-discipline, somebody mentioned that they learned self-discipline from this teacher, or from your brother, right? That it's because that they're not just a pushover, our teachers, you know, whatever kind of teachers we're talking about, they're not just a pushover, and they are actually masters in what they do. So some of you had very clear examples of masters because they were technically proficient, but they also had this combination of creativity and real character that you were drawn to. Otherwise, it could have just come from a robot or a textbook. And because of that, there's this bond that you don't necessarily have to see them all the time, but you're still learning from them. I mean, the ripple effects of these teachers was profound for me to listen to. And their patience. The other thing I felt like for a lot of us, some of these stories, you know, the person that helped us a lot was when we were having trouble, or that's when it became really clear that this person had something to teach us, was through the difficulties. And I want to pick up on one thing I think somebody was talking about. I remember early on when I was studying, I kind of got to this understanding that you don't always have to be sitting near the teacher. I mean, I had this amazing experience of, you know, having Geshe live in my house. But what I really realized is that was certainly not enough. I mean, I had to change. I had to do something. And I remember once coming up with this analogy of if you're sitting at like a banquet table and it goes stretches out as far as you can see in each direction, and all the people sitting around you that you can see and hear and listen are drunk, you know, I mean, and you don't really want to be around them, they're all loud, but if you know that way down at the other end is sitting somebody who really inspires you, say the Dalai Lama, somebody's sitting there. If your mind state is in the same mind state that that person is, you're sharing the same space, even if you're surrounded by all these really loud, obnoxious people who you don't want to be sitting with. You are mentally sitting with that other person. And that's the point, because you could be sitting right next to them and be, you know, have a completely different mind state, you know, could be completely inebriated or something and not sharing anything with them except your elbows are touching. So, that analogy, when I have to come up with images like that, when I really got my teeth into that one, that's when I felt more inspired to try to do some mind training and try to change the way that I was thinking, because I wanted to share that mental space much more than just sitting next to somebody. And I think all the teachers that you all have described, they're still sitting with us. I mean, from kindergarten teacher, you know, I love that story, the kindergarten teacher, to other teachers, how much this has stayed with us. It's very powerful. So it's the same thing with, I mean, in some ways, these are your spiritual teachers, you know. And then, but picking one who is as skilled in all these other things that you all were describing in the Dharma itself will have that same kind of, it's joining the two together. So, thank you again for sharing all those stories. We're now going to move on to the test. No, I'm just kidding. Well, not really kidding, but this is not like a quiz, test. It's just a piece of paper, and you all are going to be in groups just trying to remember things. Oh, hi, Chris. And after this, we'll have a little clip of a movie to watch. So what I'm going to do is pass this out, and if you get in groups of four or five, and I'll read them when we get into the groups, and then you all can just work them together. There's just like four or five questions. The reason I put them on a sheet of paper is so that you will have something to take home with you so you can always look at and go, oh, right, that's what that is. Okay, and they're real, real basic. I didn't do a real test. So let me pass these out to you. I'll get the groups that you were in or new groups. And Chris can join a group, and you don't have to, you can everybody come up with it. Can you pass these back? John, I'm going to hand you these. Pass these around. So as soon as they get all the way passed around, I'm going to read it out loud.
Actually, I was born in Red Bluff in Northern California, but I raised in
Stockton. I knew that was going to happen. I knew that was going to happen. I can't tell you how often that happens to me. That is so bizarre. Okay, so I am just going to read what we've got here. So the first question is, list the four reliances. just get as close as you can. This is like not only an open book, it's an open group. And so you just pick each other's brains and see if you can. And if you can't, at the end, I will go through them, okay? And then, you know, talk to each other about why it's helpful to know these and recall these. And then the next one is, in Pavanka Rinpoche's Lamrim teaching, Liberation in the Palm of Your Hand, the 10 qualities of a Mahayana spiritual guide are described. List at least three. And then the last one is, what's the benefits of having a qualified teacher of any subject help us versus being self-taught? So you don't have to use just spiritual teacher. You could talk about your profession or learning, you know, how to change your oil, whatever. Okay? All right. Go. Just let me know if you have any questions.
I actually wrote down the four reliance. I think Steph should write a book, My 9 Years with a Lama. I don't remember either. Rely on your wisdom mind, not your judgment. Deify someone, you know, wow. Or same thing if you're around President Obama or any charismatic person, the Dalai Lama, whatever, you could be a tendency to deify them rather than really listening to what they have to say and what it means.
Right.
And,
with
Jim Johnson, you know, when you're tired, you know, several of those kind of things are. Who's the other one? It was in Waco, Texas. Brett, Dave Brett. And you wonder, how on earth can people be following somebody that's goofy? But then you see people who are not goofy, but only like the Dalai Lama, and they believe everything he says. I guess you just get wrapped up in the personality.
I do. I think it's easy to. I mean, like, I get wrapped up in the
personality.
Although he writes beautiful stuff, though.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
What does provisional meaning to me? Rely on the real meaning, not the provisional.
Person needs wisdom and patience and compassion and altruism. Is that it? Humility.
They recognize their own suffering, is that it? And they're not going to the knowledge of what the practice is, and again, open-minded, common sense, strong Dharma interest, respect for Dharma, and qualified conscious. I should have titled it.
And the last one is, what's the benefit of having a qualified teacher of any subject versus being self-taught, just listen to examples from your own experience. Well, I get easily, right now you're in the reading, I'm driving the there are things that don't translate well. Some authors, the Dalai Lama, either his English is perfect or he's got really good editors. It all makes sense. It's all very easy to follow. And some of the others are not easy to follow, and they'll throw in a Tibetan word now and then, or they'll throw in just like Lama so and so. Who's this? What are they talking about? And I find it very hard to follow sometimes. Yeah. Oh, the Vietnamese. He's very easy. I love it.
Well, like this weekend, Amy Miller, everything she said makes sense. Clears you out.
Do you take about 4 minutes to wrap up?
What is this now? Oh, yeah. Audible.com.
Thanks, Chris. Oh, thanks, Chris, for remembering. Well, I know he sent you a text, but I thought.
Eileen.
Yeah.
And I just didn't have the right karma, so I drove home and sent me a text. And I saw that there was a text from Brian.
Uh-huh.
I thought it was a Facebook comment.
Uh-huh.
On something I did, so I didn't read it. And finally, about 15 after.
That's what he said. He said, usually he reads me. That's okay. It would have been fine. But. Right, exactly. Okay, try to wrap up so we can talk as a larger group. Okay. You can grade your own test. That's why it's not a test. It's just notes. Okay, everybody ready? So the four reliances. Now you can take notes if you missed one. What's the first one? Oh, and there's a mic somewhere. First reliance. Rely on what? The message? Okay.
Not the personality.
The method.
The message, not the personality.
The message. The message of the teacher, not his personality. And I'm so glad you're here, because remember one time you were saying, or the other time you were here, like, you know, why doesn't the teacher just kind of like wear a burqa so we don't even get distracted by the personality? So it's a really good question. And you heard when people were going around talking about their teachers how they were very charismatic, or, you know, the person was so interesting and compassionate too that they were just really pulled in. So part of that, you know, I've heard Geshe-la talk about, I think it's even in the Lam Rim text, about when you're, you know, you're first trying to get somebody's attention, like a kindergarten teacher or, you know, any teacher, when you're really trying to get these students to pay attention to you and follow you, you might need to use your personality. You know, you might need to use something more than just, you know, a blank screen. And so that kind of pulls people into, like, I'm going to pay attention to this person because they look like somebody, you know, acting like somebody that I can listen to. And then that's when you go with this one. Then you have to remember so that you, and that's, instead of them wearing a burqa, you have to do the thing of like, okay, I shouldn't be too dependent on their personality, because we're all humans and their personality can shift a little bit, or they might have a bad day and then I would be devastated. But instead, if I'm relying on their message, then I'm safe. Then their personality can come and go and I'm safe. So then what's the second one? Rely on the meaning, not just the words. That's right. Rely on the meaning, not just the words. Because, so now you've kind of moved past the personality and you're relying on the message. But sometimes, speaking from experience, you know, I can have maybe memorized something and think I got it, and it, you know, I really need to go further with it. I really need to understand what the meaning is, not just that I've memorized it, not just the words themselves. Okay, and then the third one. This one is the kind of a what? The real meaning, and not the interpretation of the provisional one. So, and I need to find a really good example of this, but what I was reading is, it's especially like in some texts, for sure, there can be lots of different interpretations about one thing, and what they're saying there is, you know, really rely on the real meaning of something, for example, with a teacher, so rely on what that teacher said to you, not what all these other people are saying that teacher said. You know, follow what the real meaning is. Not all these extra comments on their meaning. And then...
It's also a thing. It's the words that you use, it's what you mean. Mm-hmm. And someone can say four or five really ugly words to you, but if they say it with the emotion or whatever, they can be beautiful, even though it's all wrong.
Right. Right. And so, you have the mic, so we can... Oh, there we go. So can you give us an example of, like, are you saying that in that case you would rely more on the tone rather than on what the person is really saying?
Yeah, like somebody can say something. Someone can say something really derogatory and really ugly, but in the way they say it, it can be very beautiful or sensual or, you know, affectionate. But if you wrote the words, it would be terrible.
Right. So I think that would mean, though, rely on the meaning and not just the words.
Yeah.
Right. And so then it goes one level deeper, which is rely on the real meaning. And so I think it's just also cautioning you, do you know the real meaning? Do you know the real meaning of the words? And that, I think this is also referring to that in some teachings, there's all these extra, we know that. We see people quote little snippets of, say, of spiritual texts, right? If you kept reading the rest of the sentence, it would mean something completely different. But people take this one little half a sentence and say, this means such and such, therefore, blah, blah, blah. But instead, and that's, I think, a good example, so, but they haven't finished that whole sentence of whatever they're referring to in the Bible or something. Yeah.
And also, it's around
here. Here's one over here. Thank you, Chris. Hold that thought.
When they were transcribing the Bible, and I'm sure other religious texts, the monks would put comments in the margin, and the next guy who would copy would include the comments thinking
right.
it was part of the text.
Right.
And so it was not the real meaning.
Right. It's
was
a perfect example.
An interpretation.
Right. So it's extra commentary.
Yeah.
Exactly. So and there's a place for extra commentary, but, you know, this is saying in these four alliances on relying on the teacher, make sure you're relying on the real meaning. Okay, and then the last one. Yes, rely on your wisdom mind and not your ordinary judgmental mind, which is sometimes hard to tap into, which is why we do purification practices and why we meditate and why we study so that we can, you know, have more wisdom. Sometimes this one is also, you know, rely on the emptiness of the message and not just the ordinary message. So that's why we start with the first one. Rely on the message of the teacher, not just the personality. And we're hopefully developing our wisdom mind so that it will help us more and more. So I think these, to me, are really, really important and can help you in all kinds of ways in relating to all kinds of teachers, which is why I wanted you, why I thought it'd be good to have them on your sheet. All right. What about, yeah.
How do you define the wisdom mind?
Yeah, that's a good question. The question was, how do you define the wisdom mind? Well, even on just a very mundane level, okay, you probably have moments, or at least I'll speak for myself, I have moments where I'm maybe all kind of tight trying to make a decision, and I'm very anxious about making this decision, like, okay, I'm going to go visit my father who lives in England. And, you know, if I'm getting kind of, I'm tight trying to figure out all these different schedules and all these different, these things, and I'm just getting anxious and anxious. Sometimes, though, the answer will come to me in the middle of the night when I'm not anxious and I'm completely at rest. I'll remember this other little thing. It'll come like, I'll just wake up with it like, oh, right, I have to remember that. That's kind of more about not just your anxious mind, but the wiser part of yourself. And in Buddhism, you know, we talk a lot about wisdom and compassion. And so, I mean, your question, we could take probably a month to answer your question. Or I could get somebody else to take a month to answer your question. But another way of looking at it, too, is like they say when... No, I'm not going to go down that road. Never mind. Backtrack. Well, I don't know if it's just a gut reaction, but the wiser you are, the wiser your gut will be, that's for sure. But so your wisdom mind, well, here's a good thing. They're saying rely on your wisdom mind, not your ordinary judgmental mind, right? Okay, so your ordinary judgmental mind is the opposite of your wisdom mind. Your ordinary judgmental mind, like the example I gave in the airport, when I wanted just my mother to come out of that plane, right, and every single person that came off, I was like, oh, that person's too this, too that, that's not my mom, right? My wisdom mind said, wait a minute, this is not what you're supposed to be. You're supposed to be trying to do something different. So every single, oh, you probably might not have been here for this example. So then every person that came out, I tried to imagine as somebody I was related to, and I saw them as so cute and adorable, rather than this more judgmental, anxious mind. It was like, that's not my mother. That's not my mother. Instead, it was like, oh, what if that person was my uncle or my cousin? And so, and then I had a completely different experience. So we all know more of our ordinary judgmental mind that can get very anxious and tied up in knots and, you know, think about yourself driving through traffic. And then think of yourself like, so I get acupuncture, and after I get acupuncture, man, I feel like I'm just like on cloud nine, and driving is a completely different experience. So I just try to imagine when traffic is getting bad, like, okay, I just came from acupuncture, you know, and nothing really matters anymore. It's a wiser state. You know, you can think better when you're like that. Your ordinary judgmental mind is not interfering. So I think if you just think of it as the opposite of your ordinary judgmental mind and try to tap into that more and more. But it's also a reason why it's the fourth one of the four reliances, because it's something we're developing. You know, our wisdom mind is what is in full bloom when we're enlightened. So right now there's a lot of, like, dirt on that window that we're wiping off to get a clearer and clearer view. And the more we wipe and clean that window, the clearer it will be. And but we all have that potential for a crystal clear view, pure wisdom, right? Okay. Yeah.
When they say wisdom there, do they mean complete understanding of emptiness? Or do they just mean really smart about things?
Oh, no. I mean, ultimately, wisdom in that way would mean, yeah, you know, understanding emptiness, the wisdom realizing emptiness, right? But also, I think it can be very practical here because they're saying wisdom mind, not your ordinary judgmental mind. So I think even on a practical level, we all have experiences of our wiser mind versus our tight judgmental mind. And then you amp that up and up and up and up, and, you know, there'll be other layers of this wisdom mind that we're striving towards that we might not see right now.
Can I tell a story about something that happened to me that when you were talking about this,
sure,
made me think of? Okay, I'm in my car driving over here for one of the teachings this past weekend, and I don't know why I was thinking about how tires are always wearing down. Every car you see is unrolling its tires onto the road.
Yeah.
And then for some reason, this image popped into my head or mind of I was walking behind myself and I saw molecules like coming off of me and bouncing on the sidewalk away from me. And then I immediately knew that was how I really am. And I thought, this body I have is totally impermanent.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, end of story. I won't go ahead.
Okay. Well, yeah, that's an example of your wiser mind realizing something, right?
About
Impermanence.
Impermanence, right.
Yeah.
Not understanding of emptiness.
Yeah.
Right.
But, you know, sometimes you'll present a question to yourself and slowly over the course of a week or two, some other wiser part of you kind of helps you find an answer to it. It might not be the first mind that would have thought of it. It's your more wiser and relaxed mind finally kind of absorbs something or has a realization with a small r about something. Okay. So, and I think that would help. I mean, the next question, which is, you know, how do these help you? Why are these helpful to recall? And I think, especially the first one, is something we can all use right away when we're relating to any teacher of any kind, is, you know, not to be as judgmental about the personality, but focusing on the message. And then striving, to, you know, to become wiser so that if we know that we're not seeing everything clearly yet, for me it just gives me a lot more patience to get there. All right, let's move on to talk about the qualities of a teacher. So I want to make sure you have the 10, so I'm just going to read them because we're running out of time, so that you, if you want to write down the other ones, you'll always have them. So this is kind of a short list. Rely on a spiritual guide who is subdued, pacified, most pacified. I'll tell you what those mean in a minute, but subdued, pacified, most pacified, who has more qualities than you, good qualities, perseverance, a wealth in scripture, realization into suchness, who is a skilled teacher, has love, and who has given up disappointment in the student's performance. Subdued means that the person's mind has been subdued with the practice of ethics. He or she is an ethical person. So these are, you know, really important things that you would check out for years, you know, in some cases, to make sure this person has these qualities. They embody the practice of morality in his or her actions and choices. This means that one's ethics are more than mere words. And then pacified means that the mind is also pacified with single-pointed concentration. That's a type of meditation, you know, where they have that kind of focus. This means having some control and ability to focus and concentrate the mind. Then 3, most pacified, refers to having a mind pacified by an understanding of wisdom, most specifically the wisdom of emptiness. Number 4, having more qualities than you. This seems rather obvious, but they give the example of if you put sandalwood together with other types of wood, then those other types of wood take on the scent of sandalwood. So you want to make sure that somebody has a much better scent than you so that you can start to absorb their good qualities. And as all of the teachers that we talked about today did have, they had some quality that you absorbed just by being around them and watching them and then trying. Realization into suchness refers to, again, the wisdom of emptiness and specifically to an accurate view of reality. The highest view, the most precise articulation of the Buddhist thought. And then the rest are pretty self-explanatory. Skilled teacher who has love and then, again, given up disappointment in the student's performance. So they're not, in a while they may have hope and love and concern and good wishes for you, they're not overly attached to your performance. You're going to fail, you're going to struggle, but they're not, their ego isn't attached to your performance, your abilities. Okay, and then hopefully you all talked about what's the benefit of having a qualified teacher on any subject versus being self-taught. Did that one make sense? Everybody have good examples on that? Okay, so Chris so kindly came to the center tonight because I have this little clip that I thought we would end on. And I saw this on YouTube or somewhere, and I really liked this because to me it showed the ripple effects of people's actions. And it's not necessarily of a teacher, although you could say it is of Shakyamuni Buddha, the ripple effects of the Buddha. So here we go.
Become this icon for the whole neighborhood. So a lot of people in this neighborhood that are not Buddhist that really come and just, they talk in front of them, they walk by and they walk their dogs, they stand there for a while, and they're just the neighbors going by, but it's a place where people meet and talk, and it's just cool.
Sometimes I'll light an incense, and I'll just sit there for a couple minutes and enjoy the peace and tranquility.
He's got a Facebook page, he's got a Twitter account. He's more connected socially than I am, you know. He's a great little guy, I guess. Has a security camera now. He's got chants all the time, you know. It just kind of turned the whole thing around to zero. No more mattresses, and no more garbage, and no more graffiti, and no more hanging out. It's an amazing thing. It's like the tossing the stone in the pond, you know, just ripples out.
Well, I really like that. I thought that would be an appropriate way to end this class. So I've
really enjoyed coming here and meeting all of you and hearing your stories, and I really appreciate all of your energy and, you know, your drive. How long is your drive to get here?
2 hours.
2 hours. Every last time we were going around, people were like, I'm 5 minutes away, you know. And but they say the longer you drive, the more merit you're creating. So congratulations on all of that.
We just drive around and around.
Well, not needlessly driving. No, we should drive and pick him up. So anyway, you all are amazing. And I think the next module starts in August. And I can't remember which one it is, do you know? Refuge? Oh, that's right. It's Refuge. So that's a great module. Today, you know, it was really interesting. I'll tell you this really interesting story. So at the memorial service was for my friend whose name was Eileen. And I met Eileen when Geshe-la had first come here, and there was a potluck, and we didn't have this center yet. We just had the little basement. And we were all, and I mean, I was like maybe 6 months ahead of her in terms of studying all this. And she's, saw me at the potluck, and she came up to me and she said, would you be my mentor and teach me some of these things? And I can't say no. So I was like, okay. And that's how we became friends. So here was this, you know, very poignant memorial for her today, and we're cleaning up, and this woman comes up to me and she said, somebody told me to talk to you because, you know, I really want to come to the DB classes. I'm just trying to learn about Buddhism, and I'd really like to come, and my name is Eileen. And I just thought, okay, well, please come. So hopefully she'll be here at the Refuge module, and please find her and welcome her and hang in there. And, you know, if you have any questions, you can always email me or call me or get in touch with me, and I will see you at the next one. I'll see you here sometime soon. So let's take a minute, though, to dedicate all the merit that we collectively and individually have created by all of our efforts to get here. And, you know, you're amazing in helping everybody and sharing your thoughts and questions. This helps all of us. All of your stories, your experiences, your smiles. So then what we understand, and when we're talking about cause and effect and dependent origination and karma, is that none of this is wasted. These are seeds that you've created. And now in dedicating them, you are deciding where they will ripen, where they will take shape. So you get to decide that. You know, here's a suggestion. have it ripen as your future enlightenment, your wisdom mind, fully blown, fully in bloom, so that you can benefit all those around you, that the ripple effect is as profound as possible. So that you have all the qualities to teach and lead others in the ways that you've experienced it and the ways that it's even hard for us to imagine. And thank you again. Okay. All right. Thank you.